Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 401 of Signals from Mars. This is the lost episode. I recorded the what is episode 402 first, at least the host wraps, and call that 401. When I did it. But no, this hour one special is actually episode 401. Let's do this.
I'm ready.
Let's do it.
So I had technical issues when I was supposed to edit and release this episode. And what happened was I was having issues with my laptop and figured, all right, well, I'm not going to release this on Friday like usual. I'll release this on Monday. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, I'm never going to have time to do that. Okay, well, I'll just skip a week. Not a big deal. Not as if... Not as if I've got anybody with pitchforks at the front door going, where's the episode? So I was editing what is, as I mentioned at the beginning, episode 402, which is the Queensryche albums countdown. And I'm going to prepare I've uploaded the audio to rss.com and I'm going to prepare the actual images that go along with everything, all the graphics. And it says there's already an episode 401. I'm like, there's already a 401. I look and I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. I never did edit this episode. So here it is. Here's episode 401. The real 401 with the hour one motif, which if you're not aware or you haven't checked this out in a while, it is just a music discussion between a bunch of different patrons, basically, and myself. We have Johan, we have Brad, and we have Jeremy joining me, and there are several topics that we touch upon, including the passing of both Paul Di'Anno and Jack Russell, which happened recently. And I don't usually touch on musicians' deaths and stuff like that because, I don't know, I want to keep things, I don't want to say cheery, but, you know, we're all getting old. Our idols are all dying, you know, because people are getting older. I remember talking to Mark Striegel about this a bunch of times. You know, the older we get, all these artists that are 20, 30, 40 years older, in some cases, are going to be dying also. Yeah, it sucks. But Di'Anno and Jack Russell, I think, I've had Jack Russell on the show. Paul Di'Anno, I never had him on, but we've talked about him over the years. And he's made enough of an impact in hard rock and metal that I thought it was something that we needed to address. So this is that episode. This is where we talk about that. We do touch upon a bunch of other music-related topics. The cool thing is, if you watch the shows when they go out live, I know that there are some people that prefer the audio version, but whatever I post up on YouTube is usually going out live, or if I've pre-recorded, it's set to go out there. And then I add the audio a week later to kind of remind you people, oh yeah, there's a live show tonight. So in most cases there is, other cases there isn't. But that's why it's important to keep track of the socials and all that good stuff. SignalsFromMars.com is the one-stop shopping place to keep up with everything that's going on with the podcast and the video show. So that's that. Let's jump on into the episode. Thank you for listening. As always, it is much appreciated. Here we go. Welcome one and all to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm Victor, and I'm joined by a bunch of cavalierish gentlemen from around the world. This is why I love doing these shows. We have Johan from Sweden, we have Jeremy in the UK, and we have Brad in Idaho.
My own private Idaho.
Your own private Idaho. There you go. So this is great. We're back doing a hour one music discussion here. We're going to be talking about a bunch of hot button topics. When I wrote this up, it says that this episode is must hear. It's must hear topic. Let's go with the first topic, because all over social media and all over the news sites, we all know by now that we've had some fairly big losses in the hard rock and metal community. Paul Di'Anno, original Iron Maiden lead singer, singer on the first two albums, if you go back, and even the band has honored people that have been in the band previous to Di'Anno, but yeah, there you go. You have Jeremy there with the original cover, the redo, but since you're showing us that, I came back from London with this. I told Jeremy this last week off the air. One of my things was that I needed to come back with vinyl from British bands. And I came back with the first Iron Maiden album, and I came back with Love by the Cult on vinyl. So I think I checked that box off fairly well. But anyway, I was going through social media, and I have Lee Hart, who was the lead singer in Fastway after Dave King left the band, and he had actually worked with Paul Di'Anno as well, because Lee had worked with Joan Jett, and he had become, if I'm not mistaken, one of the house writers for, I don't remember if it was RCA or what label it might be. And Paul actually sung a bunch of songs that Lee had written, and which subsequently ended up on two Fastway albums also. So there's interesting takes of hearing those songs with Lee and with Paul singing. Anyway, I don't know. We've talked about this at length. Jeremy, you and I have talked about Paul and everything that he by doing with the DHS and everything that happened after that. And even before coming on the air, I was showing you guys a magazine where they have an interview with Paul Di'Anno, and this magazine was just released this month. Obviously, nobody expected his passing. Yes, he had health issues, but based on the information that the family has released, I guess his heart kind of bled out if I understood that correctly. Sad to see his passing, obviously. Those first two Maiden albums, at least for me, especially Killers. Killers is the real big one for me. I like the first Iron Maiden album. Yes, I showed that I bought it. I didn't have it in my collection. But Killers to me is one of my all-time favorite albums, one of my albums. And I can flip-flop the order. I mean, I think Seventh Son is probably definitively my number one, but number two could be Killers, could be Power Slave, could be Brave New World. Depends on what day of the week it is, you know? So, anyway, Jeremy, again, we've talked about Paul Di'Anno and his tomfoolery over the years. What type of press did this release or did this receive in the UK? Has there been like any mention on like regular news about his funeral yesterday or anything remotely like that?
Yeah, when he died, the news covered it. I mean, it was certainly on Sky News. It got covered then. So, yeah, there's been a little bit, and on the social media, of course, it's been covered. It's been covered, obviously, a lot in the heavy metal papers, you know, the rock sites, all that sort of stuff. But generally speaking, a lot of people who aren't into heavy metal have been talking about it as well. You know, there's a lot of people who know Iron Maiden, so, you know, they're going to talk about it. A lot of people who actually will have remembered him, you know, as the first Maiden, you know, they remember those two albums, or at least debut album, you know, when they first started. So they do remember his voice. Many people actually do prefer it. You know, I talk to a lot of people who say, I made and finished when Paul Di'Anno left. Those two first albums.
Right.
Are great to me, but after and so fast. Get a lot of that. And I, you know, I wanted to focus a lot tonight on the music and Paul Di'Anno, the contribution to, you know, to what he did to Iron Maiden, really. And I think Iron Maiden themselves wanted to do that, didn't they? Very recently, in the last year or so, there's been a sort of, you know, he's met Steve Harris and he's met Bruce Dickinson and he's got himself around talking to these people, and they've welcomed him into the fold, haven't they? They've welcomed him back. We know that he was an alcoholic. We know he diddled the NHS a little bit. But apart from that, you know, he was a lovable rogue, and a lot of rock stars are like that. And I sort of started listening to a little bit of the old music again, as you probably have. And I listened to, my favorite was Wrathchild. I thought he was absolutely tremendous on that. I can't listen to Bruce singing that. It's a Paul Di'Anno song. You know, it's Paul singing it, and he was, you know, he was that sort of punky element. You know, he was a sort of punky singer, really, and it was he was that bridge between and being a heavy metal band, and he was in the middle, and he started off, and I just loved it. Like we all, you know, when we first heard that first Iron Maiden song, that first Iron Maiden album, we loved it, and we loved it because Paul was on it.
Yeah, I truly think that for me, as I mentioned, Killers is my favorite of the two. Honestly, side two of Killers to me is a perfect album side, from the title track to Twilight Zone to Prodigal Son to Drifter. I think it's those four. Am I missing anything off of that? No, I think it's just those four. To me, that's a perfect album side. And I remember, as much as I love Wrathchild and Murders in the Rue Morgue and stuff like that, I would listen to side two and rewind it and listen to it over and over and over again. I just love those songs so much. Johan, in Sweden, how much attention has the passing of Paul Di'Anno received?
It was received all in the biggest newspapers and in the television. So it was very big. And they, you know, the headlines were the singer of Iron Maiden is dead. So they will get a lot of clicks. But yeah, big news, very big news and very sad. Not really surprising. As you said, he had bad health, but yeah, very sad. I think Jeremy said it all about him. My favorite album by him is with Iron Maiden is the first one. It's a perfect album, not a weak song, all classics. And I also love his voice, especially in the ballads, you know, the song Strange World on the first album. Yes. He sings really good.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
So, a great singer and a great personality. Actually, we had the chance to book him here in my small hometown in the early, I would say, 99. Around that time, he toured with a bunch of Swedish musicians, and I was one of the people who was. I had something to say about it, and I actually turned it down because I didn't think that he would make a good show and he wouldn't draw that amount of people to the restaurant. So. And I can really regret that now. But I think it was the right choice. But back then he didn't, I don't think he was in a really good shape.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, there's a lot of stories of that because in the US he toured with Icarus Witch. And there, Jason McMaster, who I'm going to have on the show shortly, he did a tribute on his podcast, Talk Louder, and they talked about the fact that that he was basically carried each night by Icarus Witch, and how, you know, there were a few sticky situations that the band helped him get out of, so that he wasn't, you know, in the best frame of mind. It wasn't the greatest time, you know, and I get exactly what you're saying. I have behind me, it's over here, you can kind of see it. And I've had this for a long time here. There's Twisted Sister, but underneath the Twisted Sister, is Paul Di'Anno's Battle Zone. So, and this is nothing like Maiden. I mean, to be quite honest, it wasn't what he had done. Like those songs that I referred to that he had recorded that Lee Hart had written were a lot more polished, were a lot more like in the vein of wanting to be Bon Jovi and stuff like that. And I remember hearing that stuff and thinking, you know, Paul can do so much more than this. You know, it comes back to what we were talking about before, Johan, and having to heat the pool. That's what that material always felt like to me, because You listen to him in Maiden. I listened to him on this. And I mean, it wasn't super heavy, but it was, there were elements of thrash metal to it. It was, you know, of its time. And then even when he released the Killers albums, Killers was a pretty heavy band as well. The second album sounded more like Pantera than it did, you know, what we were used to hearing from him. So yeah, it's a shame, but I mean, obviously we've talked about different aspects outside of music. It's a shame that after Maiden, he didn't receive the same maybe notoriety that obviously Bruce did or Rob Halford has. And even looking at a Blaze Bailey, I think Blaze Bailey probably has received more notoriety for the music that he's done as a solo artist than Paul has as a solo artist. And I don't know if that's because Blaze has kind of stayed in his lane to an extent. He's kind of understood his audience and hasn't tried to go for like super radio friendly stuff to, you know, make a lot of money or whatever. And that's where I think Paul may maybe have had some pitfalls along the way. But I mean, that all ultimately comes down to opinion and whatnot. The other passing that I wanted to talk about, and Brad, this is something that I wanted to throw in your direction. I wish that Metal Dan would have been able to join us because I mentioned to him talking about this person, and that's Jack Russell, who I know Metal Dan had seen as the front man of Dante Fox, as well as Great White. And you're from, you know, you were in that general area for a very long time as well. Did you get to see him in Dante Fox, or have you only seen him as part of Great White?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I was actually gone from that area in 81. Okay. So yeah, and Dante Fox, you know, it's hard to know how old. I could have seen him somewhere. I mean, at a party, at whatever. Cause I mean, bands were everywhere. But not knowing it was him, the first time I know that I saw him, was on their first tour after their first album, warming up for Judas Priest. At this time I was in Fresno, for a moment, and they were really, really good. I mean, as a you know, new band hitting the stage, and he was great. He was great live. I mean, hitting all the notes. He was a great front man. He looked the part, handled the mic stand very well. Was constantly throwing it all over the place. Just everything. Yeah. He had it in his younger day. Mm-hmm. I remember once, and I think it was warming up for Kiss, or maybe it was Scorpions back in 88, 89 type area.
In Spokane?
No, this was actually in Salt Lake City.
Okay.
And Shelly, we were sitting right off the side of the stage. This is in the old Salt Palace. And Shelly just looked at me and said, "Guy, he's a rock star. I mean, he's just got that." And said, you know what? You're right. He really had that in his younger days. You know, it was tough to see him physically in his latter days because he was pretty messed up. He could still sing quite well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. His voice is, it's amazing that with everything that he went through health-wise,
yeah,
that his voice was still amazing all the way up until the end. I mean, there was footage of him from maybe 2 months before him dying. And he still sounded as good as he did on the albums. That was one of the things when I interviewed him a few years ago, that kind of stood out to me with that Jack Russell's Great White album, is that he still had the vocals. He still had the melodies and even the new treatments on some of the old Great White classics. A lot of times it's to detune because the guy can't sing anymore or whatever. But Jack was singing this shit like he was, like it was 82 again. You know, it was amazing.
You know, if you want to talk about how great a vocalist he was, I mean, look at all the people who tried to replace him in Great White.
There you go.
Failed miserably. And there's some really, really good singers, too. I mean, he had something that, I mean, the new guy actually channels him pretty doggone well. But other than that, there's not many people that can sing that stuff. I think it was Janie Lane who sang with them for a while when he was really sick. I think it was him that kind of plugged him in with the band. And he said that stuff's like near impossible to sing. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, he was a great singer. And he was kind of a one of a kind, and he could do Led Zeppelin better than Robert Plant.
Right.
I'll give him that too.
As far as Great White is concerned, Jeremy, were you a fan?
Well, I did listen to them a little bit back in the day. I mean, they didn't really translate a huge amount out over in the, but I did listen to Once Bitten and Twice Shy. They were the sort of the ones that resonated. And I you know, I've gone those over the years as well, you know, just now and again. And, you know, he did have a brilliant voice, and, you know, they were a pretty good band. Typical 80s band, very American band. But yeah, he had a very, very strong voice. He'd have got into any outfit then and you know, succeeded, I think. That's all I can say about it, really. I mean, you know, I enjoyed what he did, and I enjoyed what the band did. Yeah, it was good stuff.
Okay. And Johan, I'm assuming they've played Sweden Rock or something similar over the years. Have you ever gotten a chance to see them?
Actually, I feel like a bad guest here, but I don't know much about Great White.
Okay.
I don't know if they have played Sweden Rock. Wow. I have never seen them. Okay. And they were never big here in Sweden. So, no, I really can't speak much about them.
Okay.
But if you have, you know, like, what do you say, a tip for the best record to start, I'm happy to listen to them.
Yeah. Okay, Brad. So let's see if we're on the same page with this. To me, yeah. I think that there's three albums by them that are above all the others. To me, their first album is great. That's been re-released under a lot of different names. Like, I have it under the name Stick It. I've also seen it called Great White. I've seen it called Down on Your Knees as well, I believe. To me, the first album is great. To me, Once Bitten is probably... It's pretty close to a complete package. It just didn't get to be as big as the next album, Twice Shy, but I think the songs are better on Once Bitten. There's more variety on there as well. And then I think the album Psycho Motel, which was their last, I think, Geffen album, if I'm not mistaken, that came out when the popularity of the band was totally gone, but they kind of still put out a Great White album. You know, it was a little heavier than what they'd done in the past, but it was still bluesy. It still had a ridiculously good ballad, which they've always released ballads. The song Old Rose Motel, I think, is just really good. And I'm not a big ballad guy, but there's a lot of good stuff on there. And to their credit, I think while Jack was in the band, every album had at least two to three good tracks on it. Like the Great White playlist that I have on my phone has stuff from throughout their career because they were that solid. I know that a lot of stuff gets looked at in a certain light, especially in the U.S. because of the station fire. I haven't read Jack's book. I haven't listened to it either, but I know that that's something that haunted him up until when he died, especially because so many people, I mean, there was real hate that came out that I saw when he died, with people saying, you know, I'm so glad he's dead. He killed, you know, my friend, or he killed my spouse, or this and that. And
can I just say that's totally unfair? I mean, he had no control over what happened. I mean, right. you can't blame him. You can't blame anybody in the band, in the actual band, the musicians, for what happened there. But yet everybody did. And you're right. Everybody treated him like crap. I mean, he afterward, they had benefits trying to, you know, raise money to help the families that were involved. And he wanted to participate, but they wouldn't let him, you know, because there was so much hatred towards him. And you're right, man. He couldn't talk about that without breaking down till the day he died. That was just a devastating moment for him. And he lost a band member. I think he lost other guys part of their group there. It was just a terrible thing. And I think it's wrong for people to be so hateful about something like that. I mean, everybody suffered. So that's my take on it.
No, I agree with you on that. There were a lot of external factors that played into that. And you could blame, you know, the guy that ran the station, possibly the owners, the person closest related to the band, the manager that lit the fireworks. I mean, but again, this wasn't something that other bands weren't doing. A lot of bands were doing this stuff. It was unfortunately the perfect storm that took place. You know,
things just went wrong.
Okay? Right.
And, you know, that's the way life is, man. Sometimes things just go wrong with no bad intention. And I don't think anybody had a bad intention in that moment. And it's unfortunate. And yeah.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, one of the neat new features that we do have here is that we now have a scroll across the bottom where we can pimp out different places where you can follow the podcast.
Nice.
That is correct. And if there's any trouble following any of these, you could just go to signalsfrommars.com, which is your one-stop shopping place for absolutely everything. And we see that Brad is wearing the lovely bucket hat. That's it. And Jeremy's wearing the
hoodie. I need one of those. Huh?
Well, if you want to pick one of those up, Brad, look at that. You've got a nice QR.
Can I just say that's a great price as well? Because I just bought a. Good. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I was just saying they're really warm as well. They're, you know, a good purchase for me because I've worn it a lot.
Yeah. And the hat, actually. The base prices are set by the provider that I use. So
nice. I've had more comments about this bucket hat than I've got several, as you know. Right. More comments about this one, positive comments, especially from the ladies.
Good, I hope.
Yeah.
Especially from the ladies. There you go.
The ladies. Dudes don't. Who cares what dudes think? But the ladies like this one. So
yeah.
I just finished listening to Alex Van Halen's audiobook, Brothers. And that's one of the things that he talks about, that yes, they were a heavy metal band, but that they were able to pull the ladies in. So he says that that's one of the things that separated them from some other bands. Yeah. So,
hey, I want to give my three Great White albums that I think.
Okay, go ahead.
That I know Jeremy's too busy listening to new music to listen to old music, but I think Johan, this is going to be your assignment. I agree with Victor that the first album, which should be self-titled, is it's nothing like the rest of their albums. And I don't know why they tried to get away from that sound. And I've heard them talking. I was like, well, we're not really a heavy metal band. And they went on, I guess, to prove that their following albums. But that last time I saw Great White, that which was last year at M3, this is without Jack, of course. This is the Mark Kendall version. But they played Stick It off this album, which and it was great. And I was chatting him up, chatting with him while I was waiting for my flight the next day. And he said, yeah, he says, a lot of people now want to hear more stuff off that first album. I said, that's cool. I'm totally down with that. Now you got the right guy to sing it too. So, yeah. So that album from a metal standpoint is fantastic. And, really, really good, cover of the Who song Substitute.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a very well done. It's a great album. So check that one out. I'm going to go with the second album as well, which called Shot in the Dark. Now, this album is where they kind of went away from the heavy metal thing, but yet it was still quite rocking, quite big guitars. But they brought keyboards into the band, which there was none in with the first iteration of the band. And they did it in a very nice way. I like the songs. There's a bit of a Zeppelin flavor, I would like to say, without ripping the Zeppelin off. So give that one a listen as well. And then I'm going to skip all the way down to 1999, an album called Can't Get There From Here.
Okay.
This is a more latter day Great White, where they kind of lost me after the Twice Shy album. You know, they had some good songs in that, as you talked about, Victor, but the albums weren't that strong. But this one, they nailed it. And I think Don Dokken, I could be wrong about this, but I feel like he helped produce that album, or he was involved somehow with that album. And it's a really solid rock album, just good bluesy, but rock album as well. So Can't Get There From Here, that'd be my third choice that you should listen to. And it'll give you a latter taste of Jack Johnson's days in Great White.
That's interesting, because that album, that's the last album that had songs on the radio, because Rolling Stone got played quite a bit.
Really?
In my area. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't make a dent where I lived in Utah. I don't think there's one off this album that got on the radio there.
So it was produced by Jack Blades.
Oh, Jack Blades. But Don Dokken had something to do with it. I know he did.
So Don Dokken co-wrote Ain't No Shame.
Okay.
Gone to the Dogs, Wooden Jesus.
Great song. I saw them on this tour. They were touring with Doc, and they were actually warming up for Doc. The new songs sounded fantastic.
Yeah. But Jack Blades co-wrote, let's see, Rolling Stone, Ain't No Shame, Silent Night, Saint Laurent, In the Tradition, Freedom Song. He wrote every song. No, actually, Sister Mary, he didn't write. That was Michael Lardy and Alan Niven.
Yeah, that's a sleeper. in my opinion. Mitch LaFon thinks differently, but that's okay. Well, he loves those ballad songs. That makes a lot of sense then. Speaking of Jack Blades, I saw him at the airport last year at M3, after M3. And, man, you talk about how tall everybody is in Signals from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Not Jack Blades. He's a wee man. He's 70-something years old. And the dude still rocks. I know it's kind of getting off topic here, but yeah, him, just rolling out of bed at the Ramada Inn and hitting the airport. He didn't look quite as sharp as he did on stage. Let's put it that way. But I saw him. Some guy cornered him. I got to say this about Jack Blades. I got to give him his flowers. Some guy cornered him there at the airport, came up to him with like a suitcase full of albums to sign.
Okay.
And I'm like, guy, you know, don't mess with a guy and he's, you know, waiting for his plane or what, you know what I mean? It's like, right. I don't know. That's just not me. I didn't go bug him, but I watched Jack and he signed every single one of those things.
Yeah. Unfortunately though, with a lot of those situations nowadays, people are getting that shit signed to sell. So.
I agree. I think that's crap. But anyway, the I could tell that it wasn't what Jack wanted to be doing at that time.
Yeah.
I think he was more interested in getting his coffee going. But he was very, very nice. Took a picture with the guy and everything. And a couple other people came up to him. And I just like, again, you know, don't bother people, man. I mean, it was Mark Kendall was the one who flagged me down. I was walking by because I was wearing a Dodgers shirt, and he goes, "Hey, Dodgers!" and he waved me over, and we started talking about baseball. And then next thing you know, we're talking about music. So,
wow.
So there you go. Yeah, cool. So, cool dude. All right, enough of those stories. But yeah, Jack Blades seems like a really good dude. Write songs.
There you go. Next topic. Download. XXII, which is essentially download 22, will be celebrated in 2025. And Jeremy, were there people shocked in the UK over what bands are headlining here?
There was, yeah. I think there was a lot of people up in arms, should we say, about who was on. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were really shocked about the headliners. And I think in particular, a band like Sleep Token headlining, you know, not being around a huge time really. But I know that Andy Copping, you know, the organizer, he said quite a few years back, he needs to push up bands to be headliners. He's making them headliners. And he only puts them there because they're selling albums, they're selling out shows, you know, they are up and coming or they are pretty big now. He knows that the old bands are not going to be there forever. He can't, you know, get Metallica or Iron Maiden all every time. So, yeah, bit of a shock to people. But also they're bands that appeal to the audience now. You know, the audience has changed over time as well. You know, I used to go to Download Festival. I don't go anymore. I'm too old for it because a lot of the bands are not for me. But he knows, Andy Copping knows his audience. He knows how it's changed over the years, and he puts on the bands for the audience, what's going to sell out. The other thing I would say about Sleep Token, by the way, is if I point my finger that way, I can throw a stone and it will hit the house where one of the backing singers used to live. She used to live just around the corner from me. And she actually sang a song at the school where my daughter was at school. And so I knew her from there. But also I know her parents very well. I know her father really well. We go and see City together. So, she's in the band. I don't think I can name her though, because I think they're supposed to be partly hidden behind their disguises or their, you know, other names or whatever. I think they've got a group name for the three of them. So but she's headlining Download, so she's pretty excited about that.
So I saw what he mentioned about that, you know, in the past they've pushed up other bands to the top of the ranks. And I guess Green Day is obviously a huge band. I think Korn is still a big draw, but Korn is, with a lot of these festivals, hasn't headlined in some time, not in like a Download type setting. You know, they played like Hellfest and been like the second to like a Slipknot or a Metallica or stuff like that. So I don't want to criticize this lineup because it's still a lot of really good bands that are going to be playing. But at the same time, Metallica is going to be back out on tour, their own tour. Maiden is going to be on their own tour. So it seems as if some of the bands that we've come accustomed to seeing at some of these festivals are going to be doing their own thing, or maybe they're going to be, you know, resting at that time, because I don't know what Priest is going to be doing, and maybe Priest is going to be, will finally be opening up for Maiden. I don't know. They've talked about that for a long time. Could that finally actually take place?
By the way, one of the other issues is the costs of the bands, which had been going up over the years. And Andy Copping's mentioned this many times. And he knows that those huge stadium fillers, you know, the Metallicas, the Iron Maidens, their price is so much now. And the cost of putting on these shows, I mean, he said it's become, you know, a real issue. So I think this is why he's gone a little bit down the order. He knows he can pay half the price to those three bands on the bill.
And they're still gonna sell most of the tickets. I mean, this was a discussion that we were gonna broach a few months ago, because I had talked about Wacken, how it was the first Wacken that didn't sell out the last day of the festival. But also we have also found out that a lot of those tickets were possibly being scooped up by brokers who are now not allowed to buy due to new laws being passed. They're not allowed to buy tickets like they were in the past. I'm trying to see with Wacken 2025 if they've listed any of the bands that are playing. I think these are from the past.
Yeah, it's getting to be a tricky time for us and festivals. And as far as having the same bands over and over and over, you gotta sell tickets. So I'm glad that there are bands that'll pull on enough people to fill download up or at least get close.
But here's the thing too. I just pulled up Sweden Rock. Sweden Rock 2025 is Slipknot, Sabaton, Scorpions, Korn, Dream Theater, King Diamond, Within Temptation, Sex Pistols featuring Frank Carter. In fairness, they'll be at download as well. Opeth, Meshuggah, Creator, DAD, Running Wild, Black Country Communion, Turbo Negro, Pretty Maids, Ginger, Skillet, The Warning, Orbit Culture, Apocalyptica, get ready, Brad, Doro, Royal Republic, Exodus, Dragon Force, The Crucified Barbara, Eagles of Death Metal, Cattle Decapitation, Samantha Fish, Nothing More, who will be at download as well, The Ghost Inside, LA Guns, Sowin, Mercure, Old Man's Child, Alien, Crimson Glory, The Good, the Bad, and the Zugly, Remedy, Sarkator, and Bloodstain. That's one hell of a metal festival, Johan. I don't know if you're already got your tickets, if you're looking to go to see this next year or not, but
I'm going.
That's a fantastic lineup.
You think?
That's ridiculous, because that covers pretty much every style of hard rock and metal you could want. It's diverse. It's a lot of music.
You know, this year at Sweden Rock, next year, it's to have bands like Slipknot and Korn play there is groundbreaking for Sweden Rock.
Right.
Because that style of metal, we don't usually have it there. So it's...
How about Meshuggah?
Meshuggah is... they play there from now and then. They are household name. But, you know, Slipknot and Korn, that kind of U.S. metal is... Sweden Rock is very traditional. And those two bands are not the band that you usually hear at the campsite from the, you know, the speakers at the tents or, you know, so it's exciting. I think it's good. I hope they follow Download and book more. Green Day. Wow. I have seen Green Day twice. Excellent live band. I hope they book Weezer. That would be awesome to have a new audience at Sweden Rock, because the festival needs it. It's of course so it will be sold out, of course. But you need to have new people come there. I think it's important.
I've got a question for Johan. Actually, I mean, has the age group changed at Sweden Rock over the years? Then is it becoming much younger?
No, not much younger, but a little bit younger, I must say. Mm. The festival is very strong in Sweden, and people go there from not only metalheads, just to experience Sweden Rock. So it's the festival is now very, what do you say, very rooted here in Sweden. It's a safe place to go to, you know. It's good, organized, very, you know, very known, very, very known in Sweden. So, but I really hope they follow Download. I have seen Scorpions and Judas Priest and all those bands many, many times now. So I applaud the new bands. New Weezer isn't a new band, but
right,
you know what I mean.
Different
bands
you had in the past. Yeah, and Resurrection Fest, which is the biggest festival in Spain, they've announced Slipknot, Korn, and Judas Priest as their headliners. So all right. Accept has announced that they're going to do a 50th anniversary tour, and they plan to feature, or they've sent invitations to try and feature Udo Dirkschneider and Peter Baltz. No olive branch to, oh man, now I can't remember the name of the guy that sung on Generation Clash. David Reese.
Yep.
There's a third name in there somewhere. David something Reese.
Oh, that's David Reese. This is David Reese.
Okay.
Pretty sure. I mean, he might have a middle name. Udo. Maybe his middle name is Udo.
Okay, there you go. So what do you guys think about that? Because there's been so much bad blood over the years, especially with Peter now jumping ship and being part of UDO and Dirkschneider. What do you guys think about them reaching out and saying, hey, we'd love to invite Udo and Peter? Is that the band just saying that as lip service, just to come across well with the fans? Or do you think that they've honestly reached out to those guys to try to get them involved?
I bet they have. And I've got a visual of why this is, okay?
Okay.
It's all about money. So, yeah. I mean, except, okay, their last tour that they did here in the U.S., which I didn't get to see them, unfortunately. They were nowhere clear close to here. They were the support band for KK's Priest.
Wow.
And okay. they were playing clubs, okay? Not theaters, not, I mean, they're playing really small places. I know, except that's the closest thing, except with, you know, the current group of Accept, that's the closest thing they've done to a tour of the U.S. They typically only do just a few dates in the U.S. They pick a few hot spots in Texas and that where they can, again, get the most money. And I'm sure if there was enough money involved, Udo and Peter would be happy to come back and do it, because I think money is the main reason those guys aren't part of Accept now.
Could be. I wonder if similar to I guess Overkill recently parted with Jason Bittner, and mm-hmm. they were saying, the band was saying, oh, we've parted on great terms, we knew this was coming, so on and so forth. And Jason, actually this week I was reading an interview where he was saying, yeah, it wasn't about the money, I was miserable in the band, I didn't just want to be the drummer. I wanted to do other stuff in the band. So for some, yes, it's all about heating the pool. And for others, they need that creative out along with it. So that's, yeah. That's interesting. Okay.
I saw, sorry.
Go ahead.
I saw a picture of Accept. I think they were playing in Munich in Germany, and they were playing in a club as well. So I think it's a good idea to do something. I think they have, gone the whole line with the singer from, the American singer. I don't remember his name, but...
Mark Tornillo.
Yeah. I like him. I like really the albums.
He's really good.
Yeah. But I think the popularity has gone down when they are touring regular. But, I mean, if they play Sweden Rock, they always play the biggest stage. I think that would be a nice thing to do, to perhaps end... Accept with a big tour with both Udo and Peter Baltes. So I hope they can make it. I will go and see them again, of course.
Mm. Yeah, you might as well get Stephen Kaufman in there too. He's still alive. I would actually, I'd love to go see that, but I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, and the next kind of reunion that I'm going to mention, again, something that I picked up in London. This is an EP that I have on CD, but didn't realize that they released this on vinyl. It's a Record Store Day exclusive, I guess, from this year. And it is this is called Revu Songs. It is by Sepultura, but this is the Derek Green Sepultura, and on this they cover Exodus and Massive Attack and U2 and Jane's Addiction and Devo and a few other bands. But now Andreas Kisser has said that he wants to have the Cavalera brothers involved in Sepultura's very last show, and he's actually... come out and said, his wife passing away has kind of made him realize that as much as he loves music, that he needs to do other things in his life outside of music. So that's why he wants to end Sepultura. But I don't know, this again, a band where that's had a lot of bad blood between the members, issues with management, the old manager's married to Max. Can they do a one-off? Would a one-off be good enough? Does them playing, does them playing with the Cavalera brothers all of a sudden spark interest in promoters wanting to book them? So, I don't know. Johan, what do you think? Does the Cavalera brothers playing with Sepultura again get them on Sweden Rock?
Absolutely. No doubt. I would go to Stockholm to see them, Sepultura only. Love that band when the band was original. So that would be a big thing.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw them on the Chaos AD tour 1994. And back then, they were one of the biggest metal acts, I think, in the world. What a crowd. What a crowd.
Wow.
At Roskilde Festival. Yeah. It was mayhem. Crazy. And I met the band afterwards. Actually, I waited on the backstage entrance because I have heard that they always go out in the crowd after the shows to speak with the fans, and they did. So I had the opportunity to drink a beer with the Cavalera brothers in 1994. But absolutely, yes, that would be amazing if they would reunite that band. Yes.
Okay. Except going back to them, they plan on celebrating the 50th anniversary of the band. Don't remember if I mentioned that or not, but there are other bands that are going to be doing similar. Maiden, for example, is also going to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the release of the first album, if I'm not mistaken. And we're seeing a lot of...
No, I was just going to correct you there, Victor. It's actually from when they started, before the first album.
Okay. Okay. So does that mean that they're does that mean they're going to be playing Invasion off of these Soundhouse tapes on the 50th anniversary?
Who knows?
They did say that they're going to be playing stuff that they haven't played in a long time, and it'll probably be the last time ever playing some of these tracks. So that should
women
be
in, Women in Uniform will be the first track that they come out to. Wow.
That would be interesting.
50 years, man. What, 1975?
Yep.
That's apparently when the band was first formed. Yeah. Before they even released any music, yeah.
What do you think about bands celebrating that? Like, this is the day that we first, two of us first met or whatever. I don't know. I say it should be the first album. That's when you should, when the first album's released, that's when the band really is the band. And
the big question is whether think they're going to go on for 50 years. They might be
right.
That's the point. They can't wait that long.
That's the same thing that I had in mind, because the first album came out in 79? Is it?
Might be 80. April 1980. April the 14th, also, 1980.
Okay. Who's still
in the band from that time?
Steve. Yeah, and Dave Murray.
So that's the thing. I mean, for them to get to 50 years from when the album was released, currently we're looking at a little over 5 years.
Yeah.
Will the band be around in 5 years?
Will the planet still be around?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, they might not because you know, they just might not. I won't want to say why, but, you know, various things may happen over those 5 years, and they may just decide to stop playing. I mean, we know that the drumming at the moment is not up to the best. Who knows whether Dave Murray just want to go off and play golf for a bit and finish.
Yeah, and he was just rushed to the hospital a few weeks ago.
Apparently.
So,
allegedly.
Allegedly? Okay. So does that mean that, that again, all of a sudden he's sick of touring and says, all right, you've got two other guitars, you know, keep going.
The question is whether they've got another album in them. If they've got another album in them, which might take a sort of a year or two to finish off, then they normally a band would tour the last album, so that would take them another couple of years. I just think that they must have in the back of their mind the R word, retirement, and you know, bands can't go on forever unless you're the Rolling Stones. You can go on forever.
They've got the money to go on forever. They've got the doctors, the masseuses, and they're in a different stratosphere than Maiden, Metallica, or any of the big metal bands. So,
yeah,
is what it is.
Listen, you've got to go and see these bands now while you can. If they're out on tour, go and see them because, as we know, we love them all, and this could be the last time. It really could be the last time.
And yeah. You're so right, Jeremy. Now I'm kicking myself. Why didn't I drive 12 hours to go see Accept and KK's Priest?
Didn't you do that to see Saxon like 15 times?
Yeah, that's different though. Which by the way, Saxon coming back to the US in March next year.
Very jealous of that.
Yeah. Saxon, Riot, and Lizzie Borden in San Antonio.
Oh,
so I'm definitely going to that.
Yeah. I'm coming out to meet it.
Saxon plays 1 hour from my house in February. I'm going.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm playing in Sweden. Yeah.
Wait, February?
Excellent. Yep.
All right. I'll have to check the date on that. I keep thinking I got to get to Sweden. I have to. February would probably be a great time to come there.
No, but you're always welcome.
There'll probably be less snow there than there will be here.
Well, that's debatable. I think he's a little farther north than you are, Brad.
Doesn't matter. It's not about north south. It's about the weather patterns. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying. About 100 miles west of me, snow right now. Lots of snow right here. Everything's kind of melting. Mm-hmm. And we need some snow tomorrow, hopefully. I need to go to Sweden, and Saxon's a good reason. Well, Johan's the best reason for me to go to Sweden.
There you go.
There's some other people over there I'd like to see, Plane tickets are probably cheaper in February, right?
Probably. You should go to Sweden Rock, Brad. It's
I know.
It's like everyone is there. Everyone. If they're not playing there, they are there in the audience.
Okay. So okay.
Everyone is there.
All right. We'll see if we can make that happen.
When is that? What month is that?
June. The week before Download.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is June 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Okay.
Four days. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Speaking of playing shows and just different collaborative stuff that's happened recently, Michael Schenker obviously released an album of old UFO songs where he's got a bunch of different artists playing on the album with him. Slash has done it in the past. There's a video that came out this week, which I've scheduled to post on Patreon shortly, which features Machine Head with members of In Flames, Lacuna Coil, and Unearth. And Lamb of God has actually done this with two tours where they've released tracks with Mastodon. And previous to that, they covered Megadeth's Wake Up Dead with Megadeth. What do you guys think of these types of collaborations? Obviously, one thing is an artist having, you know, like a Michael Schenker, having big name artists come in and cover some of his old UFO classics. And the other thing is for bands that are going out on tour together to release a single where all the bands that are form part of that tour release a collaborative song together. Brad, what do you think about both topics?
Well, okay, my son, who's 22 years old, he thinks, because he, you know, he's really big into the hip hop and all that kind of stuff where everybody's collaborating. It's like everybody's got Beyonce on their albums and that. He says, I don't know why metal doesn't do that. And last year when Amon Amarth came out with Saxons and Vikings, and
well, that was good.
He thought that way. He was just like, this is incredible. He says, why don't more bands do this kind of stuff? Do a collaborative song. And I actually, it was really good. And I actually agree with that, but I don't want to see like, let's play an old song of ours. Cause then it, I don't know. I'm going to write a new song, collaborate.
Right.
I would be all for that. But the, like the Michael Schenker thing, what he's doing, having guys come in and sit in and noodle around on an old UFO song. It's like, eh. I mean, I've listened to that with Slash, and nothing wrong with his playing, but it's not like, holy crap, look what Slash did to this song. Didn't do anything. Kirk Hammett. Oh, Kirk Hammett, look what he did to Rock Bottom. Wawa. Who knew? Yeah. Write a song with these guys, man. That would be cool. That's what I'd be behind.
But see the thing with that though, can Michael Schenker entice Axl Rose to sing on a new track? Whereas Axl's covering a song that he loves from Michael's UFO days. And obviously as far as what I had heard, he had heard Slash say that he was going to go into the studio and record the track. And Axl said, oh, I want to be part of that because he's a fan of UFO and Michael's early stuff. So, and apparently he tried Love to Love, which he did, Shoot Shoot, which Stephen Pearcy ended up doing. And I forget what the third song is. So he recorded three tracks. I'm not sure if he did all the way through, but Love to Love is the one that he was most satisfied with. So that's why that's the one that ended up on the album. Mm-hmm. And that one's actually obviously going to be the selling point, because how many times have we heard Axl outside of Guns N' Roses on a Sebastian Bach album and...
Yep.
An Iggy Pop album, and that's about it.
Yeah, and on those, it's not like his voice was really a big part of the song anyway. So, right. Him actually singing Love to Love is something.
Yeah.
But you put that version up against, the original, no.
I don't know, Strangers in the Night. Strangers in the Night with a lot of those old UFO songs.
Yeah.
To me is the perfect version of a lot of those. Love to Love live is just.
Yeah, it's really good. You're right. That's a great version.
Yeah. Jeremy, what do you think about these collaborations?
Well, I kind of 100% agree with Brad. I mean, he summed it up perfectly, really. I mean, I don't like it. I think that, you know, they should just go off and record new songs, because a new song would be good. It would be like listening to a new band. That's fine. Absolutely fine. I mean, I think the Amon Amarth Saxon song was good. Sounded great. Exactly as you've just said, Victor, Strangers in the Night is an album that cannot be improved upon. So why bother? Phil Mogg's got the great voice for those songs. What has it made me do? I listened to the Schenker album. I didn't go out and buy the Schenker album. I put Strangers in the Night on my Christmas list because I want the vinyl version, because I've always had the CD. So that's all it made me do. You know, it made me realize how great the songs are, but they weren't that great on that album that he's just done. Yeah, I mean, I think it's for the musicians. The musicians want to do it. They don't want to do it for the fans. They're doing it for themselves, and that's fine. Right. You do it for yourself. We'll have a listen to them, but we ain't going to buy it.
All right. Johan, what do you think?
Agree with the previous speakers, but it made me think of the project that Dave Grohl did back in 2004, Probot.
Those were all original tracks. So that's kind of what Brad was saying initially.
Yeah,
he's pulling in all of those people, and I'm sorry to cut you off. That album to me is fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that on that album they wrote new songs.
Mm. Yeah.
In the style of the guest artist.
Yep.
So it's, Lemmy and Kronos and, King Diamond, but with Dave Grohl's music, sort of. Yeah. So that's a great album.
Absolutely. Whenever I step into a music store, I check out the P's just to see if that's on vinyl somewhere. I have that on CD. All right. And before wrapping things up here, I do want to announce that we will be doing a Queensryche special next week, next Friday. We will be voting on our 10 favorite Queensryche albums, and it should be an interesting discussion.
Number one might be. I wonder.
Ray Shorter.
There's a few albums that are going to be in the running here, because I think depending on when you jumped onto the band, when you really got into them, you're going to have a different opinion. Some people are going. It's going to be Rage for Order, as Johan said. For some people, like Jeremy, I'm assuming Empire. And
have to wait and see.
Yes.
We'll have to wait and see.
I have a question. Are we allowed to include the EP that they released initially, or should we leave that one out? It's not an album.
That's a great question. I think you have to include it.
I think you have to include it because...
Include it, okay, because it's separate music.
Yeah, because The Lady Wore Black is on there, which is very important, and Queen of the Reich, both songs that are still played on U.S. radio, surprisingly enough.
Yeah.
So, look at that. Okay. Tony Espin is saying yes.
Already yes to the EP. Okay, that's a good thing. Yeah, and I guess we also include the album Queensryche, which was kind of done by
Jeff Tate.
I was thinking if Toddler saw that. Yeah, Jeff Tate. It was done by Jeff Tate separately, wasn't it? But obviously it was under the Queensryche banner. So that will get included
The FU album, Frequency Unknown.
Yeah, you're right. That is the one. Because they did a...
Sorry, that's the one I meant, yeah. Yeah.
Victor's right.
Yeah, because that's why I was thinking of Toddler Thor, because he was on Queensryche. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, there's the Queensryche EP, and there's the Queensryche album, which features
Toddler Tory
on vocals.
Yeah, he's right.
Yeah. So there's quite a lot to choose from.
Based on Jeremy's request before going on the air, I have just opened this up.
Yeah, here we go.
And this is what the vinyl looks like.
Whoa, look at that.
Mm-hmm. That's one side.
So it's like...
That is heavy.
Oh.
And that's the other side. So as the album spins, it is going to make some interesting patterns. I will have to record that.
Yeah.
And share it.
That's a
please do.
That's a thing of beauty, Victor. That thing of beauty.
Oh wow. This is all right. So let me see if I can get the plastic off of here without ripping it too bad. But
don't spoil it live on air just for us.
No, so all right, so this is a double gatefold, which the original was not, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So, yeah, because this was part of this here was part of the lyrics, if I'm not mistaken. And so in here you can see the vinyl.
Wow.
So that's opened up.
All right,
and you see the vinyl right there. Mm. So I was told when I picked this all up that there are few copies circulating of this around. And the guy at the record shop said, you picked up a lot of stuff that isn't going to be available here to Christmas. So...
Nice work.
I hope so. There are other things that I left behind. The other things that I looked at possibly picking up. Queensryche's Empire was one of them. Two of the Rat re-releases, Out of the Cellar and Invasion of Your Privacy. But at the end, I think I got a pretty decent haul. So those may have to wait until I get back into the States because they're priced a little bit better in the U.S. So, anyway, I do want to thank my esteemed panel today, Johan, Brad, and Jeremy. Thank you so much for joining us. Also, it's not working, Brad. It's
I know. What's wrong?
Whatever it is you're trying to make it do, it's not working.
Can I get that?
I want to thank Edgar Winterson, who's come back into the fold. I want to thank.
I haven't seen Edgar in a while.
Yeah. Good to see Adele Millie, who joined us as well tonight. Say hey there. And also Tony Espin.
Tony.
Thank you guys so much for joining us tonight. And once again, thank you for supporting the show by being here. Watching this live or listening to the replay or watching the video replay. In any event, we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars, folks. See you later.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.